All right. We're now beginning a brand new segment here at WPKN on First Tuesday of Rainy Day Radio, the Youth and College Action Roundtable. And we're delighted to have three panelists here today to carry the torch, so to speak. Bobby Brown, Trinae McGee, and Dana Lindo are here. And I just want to say a word about Bobby Brown. This idea for this segment, that we hope will be a repeating thing each month on First Tuesday, Rainy Day Radio, sort of came about when you joined us for the Resistance Roundtable several months ago. You came back for another interview, and I think that night we decided we should try to do this on a regular basis.
Yes.
So congratulations. We're launching it tonight.
Yay.
And why don't you take over, Bobby, and just let us know what's going on.
Well, good evening, radio listeners. We want to say thank you for tuning in with us here at WPKN 89.5 FM. And I am Bobby Brown. I'm excited to be a part of this amazing moment, with such dynamic women. Me and Mr. Hill were talking, and we're like, okay, well, what can we do? How can we bring impact to our community from a young person's perspective, also middle school and college, but also to just people that are part of the community that are changing the way that people view things and topics and also the way that they see life. So I started to think and I said, okay, Lord, if there's somebody out there, Lord, put them down in my mind and just give me an idea of where I should start. And these two amazing women that are sitting beside me are here with us today. And I'm so happy, so happy and honored to have in the studio with us this evening, Ms. Trinae McGee and Miss Dana Lindo. They're both going to get a chance to introduce themselves. So Trinae, if you can just take it away for us.
Hello, everyone. My name is Trinae McGee, and I am a resident teaching artist at Long Wharf Theater. I travel around the state of Connecticut, and I teach after-school drama and in-school residencies. It's sort of an interdisciplinary curriculum, a way of learning, so incorporating theatrical methods into arts integration, so like sciences and social studies. And I got involved in racial justice in college. I attended a predominantly white institution in New York City, Marymount Manhattan College, and I was a BFA acting major. I was one of two Black women who identified as Black to have been a part of my graduating class as actors. And it was when I walked into the cafeteria for Black History Month and I saw an 8x11 paper of Beyonce, size paper of Beyonce and Will Smith and Whoopi Goldberg during Black History Month. And I was flabbergasted by how a school, an institution that I believe is progressive now and has learned better, could do that to my culture and my customs and what was important to me and my identity. And it made me really angry. And, you know, I heard someone say, what angers you, what stirs you that way, that's where your passion lies. And so from there, I had regenerated the Black and Latino Student Association, and it's been on and on from there. I started a program in 2016, Be the First. First is acronym for Fundamentally Inspiring by Redefining Your Scholastic Tenacity, and that's for first-generation college students, which are predominantly students of color. And so that's sort of where I am.
Wow. If anybody knows Trinae, when you meet her, she is a fireball of energy and excitement. And this is only part of her story. So there's way more where that came from. So I'm really excited to have you and welcome
to.
Here.
Thank you so much.
You know, as we soon name our show, but welcome to Rise Up, you know. And now to my right, I have Miss Dana Lindo. Introduce yourself, sweetheart.
Hi, listeners. My name is Dana Lindo. I am a Bridgeport resident, but I am Jamaican born. I migrated as a baby to America and got my citizenship in 2015.
Wow! Congratulations.
Congrats. Thank you. What really sparked my activism is my upbringing and also my college experience, similarly to you. You know, my parents told me, you can be whatever you want when you get to this country, just work as hard as possible, and you can be whoever you want to be. And so that's what I did. And I started college in Boston at Suffolk University. And it was the first time that I experienced a lot of racism and discrimination. And it was a shocker for me. Growing up in Bridgeport is definitely a different experience from Boston. And so I then transferred from Boston to the University of New Haven, mostly because it was cheaper. Mm-hmm. And there I was commuting from Bridgeport to UNH, and I didn't really have the campus experience, so I really turned to the Bridgeport community to be my campus. Mm-hmm. And as I got more and more involved, I started to support a lot of different organizations, some like CT Core, Community Organizing for Racial Equity, the Rally and Peace Project, Bridgeport Generation Now, to name a few. And here I really saw that, you know, the narrative around Bridgeport is not all bad. There are people here doing really good things, mm-hmm. who want to see better for our community. And unfortunately, there's just systematic things in place that keep us where we're at. And so in doing so and supporting and really learning and finding good mentors, I actually found my voice through supporting a lot of different organizations. Now I am a freelance publicist. I am a marketing specialist, and I am also the host of VPT Talks, which is another show here on WPKN, and a youth journalism program. And I find my activism through media and empowering the youth to speak their truth and, you know, just bring light to media representation.
That's awesome. And both of you young women share a very, very important role here in our community. And the fact that you guys both value the word activism is so important. And I truly believe, you know, growing up here in the city of Bridgeport is that if you don't have a seat at the table, you're not heard. And I think our generation has made it where we're no longer waiting for a seat at the table. We'll bring the table and the chairs and everything else that goes with it.
So absolutely.
I think that's so important that we value that. So today we're going to be talking about a few different topics. Dana definitely mentioned something, and then we can all just share different points of view on this. When you talk about the young people and the young generation that's coming up underneath us, because we're still young, but there's a group of us that are still, you know, inching into understanding who they are and what they shall become. How does the media play a role in the way young people view themselves on the activism side, also as an individual side? Any one of you can speak on that.
I think, unfortunately, you know, the people who make it mainstream in our society are people like, you know, I have so much respect for Cardi B. I have so much respect for Black women in general. But unfortunately, it's perpetuated narratives of, you know, the hood woman or the woman who is, you know, Cardi B is very intelligent. But there are some things that are controversial that she talks about in terms of just sexual fluidity. And I think in terms of being a role model, I think the role models in the limelight now are not, there aren't enough different kinds of them. Mm-hmm. And it's really normal, everyday women who should be in the limelight to, you know, normalize the feeling of, hey, I don't have to be a celebrity to make an impact in the world. I can actually do good right in my community being who I am. And I don't have to be extra or like, you know, on Instagram or anything like that. I have power just being where I'm at.
Trinae?
I think for a long time, people were not encouraged to love themselves, especially Black women and young Black women. I just saw a meme that showed a Just For Me box, and it said 1996, and then today, and it was a box full of natural hair products. Mm-hmm. You know, so for a long time, we would straighten our hairs to, you know, to assimilate to get a job because wearing an afro or dreads or braids, that wasn't seen as professional. And I think for young people now, sort of similar to what Dana said, there are not options for who you can role model after. Things are limited to the outside, vanity, the way you look, your body, and even those attributes that are a part of Black women culturally or many different women within different cultures were never celebrated. And so now you have this culture where it's like, forget puberty. If I have the money or save money or contact my insurance to come up with some form of excuse, I can alter the way I look mm-hmm. to look like this person or that person. And I think now there is now this huge movement of embrace who you are, being empowered, wearing your natural hair, loving your body, loving your big nose, seeking mental health help. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what's so cool about our generation, because that is starting to shift, I think, a little bit. Social media has become, I mean, in many different ways, it's oxymoronic, because it connects you to people you haven't talked to in years. And then you're up there and you're becoming insecure about yourself because you're comparing yourself to a made up life. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a huge, that right there is sort of like the symbolic nature of the negative side of it. It's made up. Mm-hmm. It's something that you can create for people to like what you're putting out there. And recently my mom said this, shout out to you, mom, if you're watching, but the euphoria, the things that are released when you eat like a chocolate bar or endorphins, mm-hmm. it is similar to when your mom holds you, the endorphins release. And it is also similar to when you put something on Facebook and you get a like behind it. So the same sort of like endorphins release when you get tons of likes on something. But the opposite of that is, this picture isn't beautiful enough because it only has 30 likes. I'm going to delete it, or I'm going to change this about myself, or maybe I shouldn't have wore that color lipstick, or I look mm-hmm. too big. And I would be silly if I sat here and tell you I didn't think about those things when I posted a picture. And so I think it's just important even to talk about, to give more voice to.
I definitely agree. You both spoke on two amazing things. The reason why I brought up the media and the reason why I brought up image is because we often do things based on how we feel about ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. So when I say that, that opens up other doors for other things to take place in our lives. And one of the issues that are plaguing our community right now is gun violence.
Mm-hmm. Very much.
And gun violence is plaguing our community in the sense that these individuals see those people on social media and see that life as the life that they should live. But also, too, the fact is that a lot of them are looking for acceptance from those different groups or people groups that care nothing about them. And had they have loved themselves and cared about themselves or been embraced by mentors who truly believe in them, the number of guns, because there's two sides to this, because gun violence is those that shoot the guns and those that bring the guns. There's two mm-hmm. sides to mm-hmm. it. So I often, you know, look at life as like, you know, what makes the individual pick up a weapon and decides to fire that weapon at someone because of something that they said on social media, something that they said in school, mm-hmm. or an individual that said, or basically talked about them. What mm-hmm. makes an individual do that? So for those who are our listeners that are listening in, again, you're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM right now with three amazing women. Well, two amazing women. I'm the other one, so I kind of confused you, but... we're talking about a few different topics, and if you're out there listening, we want you to call in or, you know, let us know that you're listening so that we could be able to definitely hear your different point of views on the topic. But Dana and Trine, I just want to know, like, what do you feel about this gun violence that is taking place mm-hmm. in our community? I'm from Bridgeport, mm-hmm. and I know we're all from different areas, but at the same time is that image plays a lot and media plays plays a lot on how these things are taking place. And gun violence seems to be the top-notch issue mm-hmm. right now amongst our young people. Mm-hmm. Any of you guys want to share on that?
I think what's interesting with gun violence is those manufacturing guns are those lobbying Congress. Mm-hmm. So it becomes less about caring for the safety of children and more about making money. Mm-hmm. I mean, our president himself has assets and investments in weaponry. So that makes it easy. You talked about gun violence as both ways. It's the person shooting and the person who puts it in communities to be able to access it easy. And that's so powerful. I've actually never heard anyone reference it that way, but it's so true. Is mm-hmm. those putting it in the communities and getting it there faster, it's because of money. So it's there are really no challenges for anyone to get a gun. And looking at some of the other countries and the screenings they go through. Right. I mean, Japan's screening and the gun laws there are so... They are appropriate. they are appropriate for wanting to buy a gun versus here in America, you're not even really screened as much to be able to, you know, to buy something that can really harm people and harm yourself. And I think that's what's so interesting about gun violence. And I agree with that. I'm from West Haven, but close to New Haven. And when I went to college, people were like, oh, gun wave in New Haven, like they shoot there all the time. So, but the media, you know, that plays a huge part. And, you know, more people know it as a city where people kill each other than they do it being Yale University's there or some of the other amazing things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you really shed a really good light on the national climate of gun violence right now. I'm going to take it local a little bit and center on Bridgeport because this topic really does break my heart.
It does.
My family has been impacted by gun violence. My friends have been impacted by gun violence. You know, it's a real issue here in our country, you know, mass shootings. I want to shed light on the 12-year-old in Bridgeport that just got gunned down. I think when we talk about gun violence, we have to also think about education because earlier this year in May, there was an argument with the Board of Ed and the community of whether sports should be cut from the schools. And I think that is just absolutely ridiculous when you're talking about gun violence because these guns are getting in the hands of children. That 12-year-old was gunned down by his peer.
His peer,
you know, and I think that we really have to understand the difference between equality and equity when we talk about school funding and the fact that this issue is so pressing, and if you take away something like sports or after-school programs or things like that, this just allows kids to run more rampant and gives them freedom to do this to each other.
I agree. And another thing, too, is that but society has made it where we're separating our young people because you have the students that are on the north don't mess with the students on the west. The west don't mess with the ones on the east. And it goes back and forth so that, you know, students are separated and then there's no central ground for them to be around each other. So when gun violence takes place, it is one side of town beefing with another side of town and no one understands the middle of the beef or what's going on. And then on the topic of guns itself is that a lot of these guns that are coming into our communities are guns that our people did not purchase. These are black market guns. These guns are finding their ways into our communities and they are either being stolen or bought in from someone else who has stolen them. So when the murder has taken place or the shooting has taken place, they trace it back to someone else. So they never really find the actual source of how did that gun even get into our Bridgeport community?
And in the hands of a child.
Exactly. And the thing about it is like, you know, we were discussing at a meeting recently was the BB gun epidemic that's taking place. Because those are guns that, you know, they're not guns, but they look like guns. So that's what happened in a lot of these scenarios that these children are using them as a way of safety and then coming back and finding the real weapon and using it. So for those that are listening, these are real issues that are taking place, and this is just Bridgeport. So if you're from a certain town or a certain area and you would like to speak on this as well, feel free to do that as well. But these are very, very pressing issues. So on the middle of gun violence, and if we want to just move it up a little bit and maybe we could take a break in a minute or so, is the racial injustice. Because with gun violence, we open up, so we talked about image, we talked about media, and then we saw how that segues into gun violence. Now, that also segues into racial injustice, because now we're seeing who are the people behind the guns? Who are those individuals? What is taking place in their lives? And how does that look across the board for our students that are living here in the city of Bridgeport? One thing that I learned is I recently did March of Our Lives, and gun violence has a big, big role in that as well. But when I went to the march for March of Our Lives, there were hundreds and hundreds of students gathered that day. But the thing about it is that a lot of people were saying that there weren't enough representation of those African-American children that were actually victims of school shootings. And those children weren't given the opportunity to share their voices as well. I was one. But out of me, there are many that look like me, that have actually been in those classrooms. And the conversation that was happening nationally and also locally was, where are those students that are affected by it? You know what I'm saying? We forget that that moment and that era of those young people that are affected. How do you guys feel about racial injustice across the board?
Honestly, I think I'm sad that this is even an issue. Honestly, I'm so like fed up with the fact that race is something that none of us have control over. None of us can choose what we come out as. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Something so superficial as skin is such a topic that is separating people, killing people, really. Mm-hmm. There is a real erasure of Black people in America. You can be, what's the word I'm looking for? Where there's just mass erasure, mass killings of people, similar to the genocide. Holocaust. Genocide. Mm-hmm. It is a genocide taking place in America because mm-hmm. of the color of your skin. And mm-hmm. I think, I don't even know what to say, guys.
No, it's so institutional and so embedded in the quilt of our country. It's, you know, there's blood on its hands. I mean, this is a conversation that people, we're going to be having for mm-hmm. a long time. You know, very race is time. Never going to die. Racial injustice, like Jane Elliott says, is a commitment to emotional ignorance. Mm-hmm. You just are emotionally committing yourself to thinking in a way that is completely ignorant. And the sad thing is racial injustice is not police brutality. It is also gentrification. It is also discrimination. Mm-hmm. You know, it's discrimination when it comes to getting into a college or a job. Affirmative action needed to happen because of racial injustice. You know, so when we talk about this system, it really is, it's institutional and it's systemic and it's systematic. And, you know, it's something that progressively we can all work together to ally against it mm-hmm. and reform some of these issues. I mean, just the boldness people are exhibiting, closeted racists, the boldness, I think it is even encouraged and inspired people to either do the same or to make history in Congress and elect mm-hmm. women and men of all creed, all socioeconomic background, all color, complexions, ethnicities, identities. And people know now that they have a voice against it. And so mm-hmm. you have boroughs and places writing in Alexandra Ocasio, who won her district in Brooklyn, but then won another because people knew they had power and voice.
I agree.
And I think that's what it's igniting.
I just want to take a moment to give out the phone number in case anybody out there would like to chime in and be a part of the conversation here for this first maiden edition of the Youth and College Action Roundtable. And so the number to call is 203-336-9756. I'll give it out again. It's 203-336-9756. If I may say one word about what I've been hearing here, which is really great stuff. You've mentioned, I think Dana said it first, she said there are systemic things in place, things that are built into the structure of our society, in our communities, in our socioeconomic caste system that we have in this country, or class system. And I'm just wondering what you think about, if you could talk a little bit more about the systemic things that you're battling here. You're kind of getting to it, I think, Trine. Mm-hmm. And how that actually is part of the gun violence issue. Because I think the media, that's one of the issues with the media you were talking about, they portray the gun violence thing in inner cities as being like, it's all about the gangs and it's about, you know, blood feuds and this kind of stuff. But what about the systemic issues that affect not just the availability of guns, mm-hmm. but the problems of kids just really having so many challenges in terms of housing, in terms of deteriorating schools, right on down the line? You know, I think that this is something that I'd like to hear more about that too, you know.
So. Sure. Like, I just, one, want to highlight the economics behind what we call systemic. So there are parents here. I had a conversation the other day with someone, and we were talking about how the parent-teacher meetings look in Bridgeport versus how they look in Stratford. And she was telling me her kid goes to school in Stratford. And when she goes to PTA meetings, if she doesn't get there early, she doesn't get a parking spot, you know? And then contrast, flip it to Bridgeport, you know, parents are struggling. They are struggling to put food on the table. They are struggling to just make ends meet, and they can't be as invested in their children's lives as they want to be. And it's unfortunate because I mentioned before equity versus equality. And the reason I mentioned that was because equity provides access to the same opportunities, and we have to ensure that equity is in place before we can enjoy equality. And what I mean that by that is we need to fund our schools based on learning needs and not by location. Mm. And that's how
snap.
That's how we can move things forward, because the majority of our funding, like Fairfield, the majority of their funds are from local contributions. You know what I mean? And Bridgeport, we don't have that same privilege, because there are a lot of people who can ask their father for a check to give the principal. That's just not how it works here. And so when we talk about systemic issues in place that keep people and perpetuate the issues at hand, mm-hmm. we have to first look at equality versus equity and how we can level the playing field for people who need it most, mm-hmm. you know?
And at the same time, like when I listen to you say that, it's like we feel more jail cells than we feel college schools. Colleges in general, the jail cell number is ridiculous. But then if you look at those people that are helping keeping those jail cells running, those people run a lot of the different businesses right here in our own communities.
Mm-mm-mm. Absolutely.
So we don't help rehabilitate anyone. I work with men all the time that come in and out of prison, and it's like, okay, I come out, I want a job, I want to better my life, but I still have this stigma on me that's keeping me from finding employment, that's keeping me from being able to be with my children. So I might as well go back to a place where I know that all of these things will not be a concern of mine when I come out. But we have those individuals that can come out, change laws, or those individuals that are in power to change laws, mm-hmm. but they don't look like us. Mm-hmm. They don't look like us. They don't talk like us. They don't know our struggles. So they're making laws and making rules for our people, mm-hmm. and don't even know the real struggles of our people. So that's why our jail cells have become it's a market, if you want to be honest. It's a market, and it's keeping these things going on. Trine?
I want to just give the definition of institutional racism. Institutional racism is a form of racism expressed in the practice of social and political institutions. Institutional racism is also racism by individuals or informal social groups governed by behavioral norms that support racist thinking and foment active racism. Mm-hmm. You know, so like I said, you know, it's just one of those things embedded into our country where it is systems designed for African-American people of color to not benefit from them. Mm-hmm. Even when we talk about food stamps, and those who majorly benefited from them, it was my grandmother who said, well, I was denied food stamps and I needed them. And there was a white woman who came in with the fur coat on and she was given them. And they were given them and the monies from them to pay off their boats and things like that. And so when we really look at the way in which our country has been designed and set up in many different ways, coming here and taking land from the natives, it was really never to benefit us.
Correct.
You know, and so we're fighting against systems that are not only governmental systems, but social systems, mm-hmm. social, a dance school, an educational system, mm-hmm. a college, pageantry.
Very true.
And it's so interesting that you bring up schools and educational systems, because working in educational systems, I am able to see students from like Choate and then students from inner city communities come together and see a show. And we do a clap and response and they all know it. And so that's something in which we're able to say, wow, you know, we're bridging this divide. All students are benefiting from this and they're seeing this. But then I also go into schools and there's a particular school that's in my mind that was structurally created through racist systems. And the design of it is charter. And I'm not coming at charter schools. It's just this particular school that really is created for black men to work under a white system. It's created for, it's a call and response system that's created for young black people to then graduate from the school system, go on to the next level, go on to the higher level, go to college. Many of them have hard times in college and or then end up working under Fortune 500 companies of, you know, CEOs instead of wanting to become one or dreaming to become one. And so it's just, it's a system that, like I said previously, has to obviously be combated, but will always be a challenge for people of color because it was designed that way.
Absolutely. And I want to respond to something that you said, because even something as simple as welfare, giving everyone the same thing only works if you start at the same place. You know what I mean?
That's a fact.
And I think the issue with something as simple as skin color in our country is not celebrating differences, but demonizing them and not humanizing everyone. You know, I think when we talk about black men in America, and I would be lying if I said I wasn't guilty when, you know, a black man walks by my car and I don't get nervous. And I have to wonder, you know, coming from a place like Jamaica, where everyone's black, to coming in America, where did I learn that? That is learned behavior.
It takes
constant realization, being honest with yourself, and the effort to constantly unlearn the unhealthy behavior and ideologies that you've learned in order to move forward and progress.
Wow. I am so, this is very meaty, like very, very meaty. we're not even going to be able to cover everything that we have planned to talk about. But again, I just want to give you the call letters to the station. It is WPKN 89.5 FM. We are so grateful for all of you that have taken that time out to listen to us today, and to Richard, I'm sorry. Thank you for just giving us this opportunity to be on the air. And I just want to say that, you know, each of you have spoken on different levels and different experiences, but the cool thing about it is that we have understand the value of advocating for those people groups.
Yes.
I think that is important as women, and as we pour into other young people that will listen to us and follow in our footsteps, the value of the word advocate. When you advocate for something, you're saying, I'll take a stand if no one else is standing. When you look at that word, I want this generation of young people to understand that. And, you know, just as a shameless plug, coming up in June 1st, we're having our 100 Girls Leading event, and we are so hyped, so hyped. And these two ladies are going to be a part of it, but we're so hyped. But we're teaching them the value of empowerment, advocacy, but also the power of mentorship. And I know that being a part of the city of Bridgeport and being a part of different areas and different programs, we have to understand the value of mentorship. And you said something important, Dana. You said, how do we change that behavior? And I believe changing that behavior is first being an example of better behavior.
Absolutely.
If we can have better behavior and understand the rights and the wrongs, we can better mentor those that are coming up underneath us and coming up, and those that will surpass us as well. Because no offense, we have some great people in high places, but they're not doing great things for us as people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're thinking of their own agenda, whether that's the political agenda on down to the educational agenda.
Mm-hmm.
We are forgetting about those that will follow in those very same steps.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need a lot of people running around creating this negative vibe. And here in 2019, we're in the first day of the year. I want to definitely, you know, as, you know, leaders and as young women on this particular day, we want to make sure we're pouring out that positive vibe for those young people that will follow us behind. And I think that's so important. So again, you're listening to WPKN 89.5 FM, and where the Youth in College Roundtable, hopefully we'll give it a more flavor fly vibe, rise up, you know, I'm just saying. I don't know, I just feel like it just really is, like, you know, really shows a lot for who we are,
mm-hmm.
and how we are rising up for our generation.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else you ladies would like to say, or Mr. Hill? Like, I'm not sure.
Have a wonderful new year, everyone.
Great new year.
I do have actually a question we might end
yes.
on, or maybe not end, you know, we have more time if you'd like to use it. But so, Dana, you mentioned this idea of learned behavior and trying to break down stereotypes that we inculcate through the media, probably mostly through the media, but also through socialization from our families and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
And just learned experience of being on the street and the hard knocks people take and all that kind of stuff. What came to mind was the collaboration that took place on the March for Our Lives, for which Bobby Brown was a keynote speaker, by the way. It happened all over the country. It was a big, successful event in Hartford. I think there were, some people have said there were more than 10,000 people there.
Wow.
And in Washington, D.C., I don't know if you guys saw it, but the range of speakers was really impressive. And you had kids from inner city neighborhoods around the country sharing the platform with suburban kids. So you really had a racial divide that was being bridged in that event. I'm just wondering what you see as a potential for that kind of intersection across racial and economic lines for building a movement that will address not just, you know, the challenges that inner city neighborhoods and communities face, but that affect everybody. You know, gun violence, it spans, it's across the spectrum. But there are other issues, too. There are a lot of people in this country, white people who are poor, who don't have health care, who are struggling with similar issues, but you know they're not concentrated in let's say in an urban center. So what is the potential for forming a collaborative movement across those barriers?
Number one, I think, you know, it's really, really sad because as the concept of whiteness and blackness is socially constructed, and I think people don't understand that, right? Whiteness came about after a lot of immigrants migrated to America. So, like, before it was segregated between Italians, Irish, Polish. You know, there was segmentation in whiteness in and of itself. And I think there was a mental shift that took place that separated blackness and whiteness. They clumped all of those segmented cultural groups into one, called it white, and then told them the reason that they are struggling and poor is because of some outside force, enemy, blackness that is keeping you from getting a piece of the pie. And I think that is a tragic mentality that took place for America. And the reason why is because instead of poor people, poor and middle-class people banding together to really fight for our piece of the pie, now we have this segmented idea of, no, white and black, and this should be separated. And that's the tragic part.
Can those barriers be broken? Can a movement be built across racial lines?
I think so. I do believe so. I think we've seen many different movements break forth with people uniting. And, you know, I just came from my godparents' house and we had this big intergenerational conversation. And, you know, one of the things that I spoke about was how there are a lot of young people out there protesting. They know why they're protesting and they know their rights. Mm-hmm. And that is across age, gender, and racial background. What's interesting, though, is I don't really think people, because of stereotypes and you know, deconstructions, I don't really think people even think about or consider white individuals being poor or lacking. I think that it has always been that, you know, white is right or wealthy and black is opposite, lacking, impoverished, having nothing, you know, which is why we in this country, people think of Africa as poor kids walking around. But you have Sierra Leone, you know,
that's the number one problem with myself. A lot of individuals, we don't go to those places. I've been to Africa. And the thing about that has me with them is like, You come into our home telling us what's right. That's just like telling an individual coming to your home and telling you the right way to live or raise your children. So I just want to throw that in there. They need to go there.
Yeah.
Go there and see for yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I completely agree with that. I need to go myself. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the things that I've seen. And then the depictions of poor white individuals, they've seemed to be extremely racist. And so I think one of the things that that is really, really important is having a conversation like mm-hmm. this, because this is where movements are birthed.
I
heard Sabrina Fulton speak at UConn a couple years ago, that's Trayvon Martin's mom, and she said it wasn't the governmental officials, it wasn't the president, it wasn't congressmen and women, it was the college kids started the riot mm-hmm. against police brutality because of what happened to her son. Mm. It was college campuses, she said it was kids walking out of their classrooms and just so fed up with what mm-hmm. was going on that they wanted to see a change. Yeah. And that to me is what's super divine. And even being on a college campus, I mean, the different groups you meet, so there is a lot of racism and discrimination, but there are also so many like-minded individuals and creatives and people from everywhere who, you know, don't necessarily look like you, but believe that what you are and who you are is important to talk about and to fight for. And until we see that our oppression affects each other, we'll never grow.
Absolutely. 100%.
How is Trump... the election of Trump in his first 2 years in office. How is he?
I was trying to avoid saying his name.
I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad you said it.
I know, it's a shame on the first day of the new year to have to.
Positivity, people, sorry. Positivity.
But how is that fueled? I mean, we know it's fueled something because of this election we just mm-hmm. saw, which you mentioned, Trinae, that the wave of people that got elected. Mm-hmm. A whole range of diversity is now entering Congress for the first time. But what's the positive side mm-hmm. of having a bad guy like this mm-hmm. giving energy to the kind of movement building that mm-hmm. you're talking about?
There was a message preached in my church, and it was from trauma to triumph. Or I heard it. I've heard it many different times. Mm. And I think Donald Trump being elected as president was traumatic. Mm-hmm. Devastating. Definitely. And grieving for many of us. Mm-hmm. And I think often in times where you're most vulnerable, that is when you write the most, you invent the most, you create the most. When you're dealing with so much, you listen to music and you can tell someone's writing about their life through vulnerable experiences. And I think the trauma from what we were experiencing and seeing and hearing, I think that ignited a fuel and passion of people to run for Congress to make a change who have never, ever thought about politics. You have Congresswoman Ayanna, I forgot her last name, but she's...
Johanna Hayes.
Johanna is here in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then Ayanna from Massachusetts.
Yes.
Oh, right,
you know, the first black congresswoman from Connecticut, Johanna Hayes, in her district. And then I brought up Ayanna because she is in the same office Shirley Chisholm was, you know. So when you see this, you see this, and I think that's what's inspiring the next generation, Native mm-hmm. women
yes.
who are congresswomen, women who are here first. And I saw a powerful post, and Ocasio asked one of the Native American congresswomen, how do you feel to see that statue? And she said, you know what, like it hurts. But I'm here for a reason, and we have to still fight it every single day. And I think that's what's so powerful about what it did ignite was young people who are wanting to become attorney generals and judges and just really blowing up. And I think that's sort of the aftermath of having experienced a president who tweets everything and tweets to South Korea. And, you know,
starting trouble,
you mm-hmm. know, and here we are, a nation, the melting pot we're supposed to be, mm-hmm. One of the diverse in the world.
And I think his presidency has opened a lot of eyes. And I think, too, is I always try to look at things from the positive side. I do my best to only post positive things because I feel like there's so much negative in the world. Mm-hmm. Or you're just going to sit there and take it. And I choose to be on the other side of it, which is advocating for it. His presidency has opened up the eyes of young women, young men across the board. The Women's March was birthed out of a lot of the negativity that he was displaying towards women. But it has caused women to connect and come together. That is the cause of it. He has, you know, the gun issues have caused young people to feel unvalued across the nation. And the effect of it has caused young people from all over to come together. Mm-hmm. So just imagine, and it's sad, and I do not believe that this should be the way things are, that it should take something horrible to happen for you to realize mm-hmm. that you have power. But if that is the case, if something horrible has to wake you up, I think that mm-hmm. we are awake.
Michelle Obama said it best. She said, it usually starts with something that moves you,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I really
I love what both of you said, and I love that you both touched on how this has impacted the youth and women. And I think, you know, in my mentorship, I, for the past 2 months, I've been a STEM mentor in the Bridgeport Public Schools, and talking to the youth, you know, they know what's going on.
They do.
This is second grade, third grade, fourth grade. Mm-hmm. They're very aware. Mm-hmm. And they say Trump is a bad man, mm-hmm. you know, like that simple, but they know that something's not right. Mm-hmm. And I think our generation and younger are really, that's where the change is really mm-hmm. about to happen, mm-hmm. you know, like coming up, them coming up into their 20s and, mm-hmm. and things like that. That's where we're really going to start seeing some change. And I'm looking forward to that.
So am I.
Me too.
Well, that's good stuff to begin to wind down on.
I just want to say again, thank you so much for having us here. And more important, this will not be the last time you hear from the Rise Up crew. I don't even know. We're going to work on this name. We're going to work on it. But this is not the end. And Trine, just a woman of just great stature, great power, great knowledge. I look forward to see what 2019 has in store for you. Also to Dana, to the relationship that is being built right now. I look forward to the great things that are going to come from you as well. And as a team, I'm excited to see where Bridgeport is going to bring us. And we're going to get, you know, we're going to come back again and talk about the rest of these topics. We got some really good speaking on a few of them, but we'll come back hopefully next month and begin to talk about more. But for the last bit of the show, I just want to say, I pray that everyone has a great new year. Keep positivity around you, no matter how negative things may make you feel. Try to be positive about it. And most of all, ladies, we got to rise up. Yes, so we can just say rise up on three. Yes. I feel like some momentum in there. So 1, 2, 3.
Rise up.